This is Due by Friday, the weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, watch some superhero movies. Oh, hi, Merlin.
How's it going?
Max beat me into the studio today because I was getting getting some popcorn and some powders.
Didn't they say we were going to start at noon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also
very
had to
rude.
Pee.
Very rude of both of you to be late.
Sorry. Hey, listen, I should apologize. I'm really sorry. Sorry, I wasn't technically ready to start.
Very rude.
Mark Newson hourglass for Houdinki.
Did you see when? Do you remember that photo of the? I believe it was a protest in Louisiana where a black woman. I think she was putting her hands up in like a stop gesture and walking towards the police.
Oh, was she wearing a cool dress?
Yes, and they like recoiled backwards, and it was an amazing photograph. There was a take on Twitter that I thought was really funny. Where someone posted that photo and they were like, "This is so powerful. She literally stopped them in their tracks. The police froze as though time itself stopped."
Like she's the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, like yeah. And I was like,
well, no, it's called a photograph. That's how photographs work.
It is a powerful moment of protest, but also that is how a photograph works.
In this moving photograph, this old man holds up the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
It's not actually like in Harry Potter where the photo shows you the movement, right?
No.
So of course they're frozen in time because it's a picture that's
a
its
photo
nature.
Is.
Yeah. Similarly, in the Mark Newsom designed hourglass, I really enjoyed how he was like, just by turning it over, you can start and stop time itself.
Can you guys give some context? Like, is this a famous person or a famous...
Yeah,
or
he's a very famous designer. He's a very famous and good designer.
That's the thing. I thought it was a joke.
And I'll add that this hourglass is really beautifully designed. It's a cool design object. I wouldn't buy it, but it's very expensive.
It's a little bit costly.
Just a little.
That's the... Of course, when you see Marco and I guess later Gruber linked to this, you go there and you're like, oh God, it's going to be a funny thing. And you're like, okay, obviously the punchline is going to be that this thing costs $5,000. Then you get to the bottom. Was it $12,000?
Well, and that's at first I'm like, oh, $1,200. I can convince Max to buy this somehow. I'm like, oh no, commas. Commas
well,
the
it's
other
a
way.
Small price for controlling time itself.
I buy clocks just to throw them away. I control time. If I remove my mailbox, I stop getting mail. Woo!
I mean, one of the reasons it's so funny is that this is a piece of art he's made. Yeah. And I have no problem with someone selling a piece of art for $12,000, whatever. But he's not talking about it like art. He's talking about it like a consumer product where he's like, we worked with the finest artisans to mill the glass and the perfect brass tiny micro balls. It's just like nobody can just make it a piece of art.
Chamfered edges. Also, I mean, the shocking part is the price. But shit like this, have you never been to a museum store? Like any store at a museum, there will be stuff in there that is farcically. I mean, you've got to put that. There's probably a name for this. I bet Nick Kokonis could give us a name for this. It's worth putting something on your menu that is flatly, or whether it's a wine or some kind of a special dish for the table. This was huge in the dot-com era. You had to have something on there that was a knowingly ridiculous ask.
A duck.
A what?
A duck. A duck.
A duck.
When you do client work, when you're doing like design client work, there's this thing called a duck, where it's like you give the client like four options, and the thing is, the client always wants to make a change, right? You're never going to give the client work and they're going to be like, don't change anything, it's perfect how it is, because they want to feel like they're involved and they're doing something and show you that they're smart. So they're always going to pick one or two things to change. So some designers put what's called a duck in one of the options, which is something that's like comically bad. You know, like you put like, if you're pitching McDonald's like ads for the new Whopper, like one of them depicts 9/11 in full color.
You put a 9/11 dick in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a Whopper flying into two erect penises, and it says "Never forget."
What do you think it's? We can't wait to see what you're gonna do with this.
And then Michael Keaton, the founder of McDonald's,
yes.
He looks at that and he goes, "No way, are we doing the 9/11 dicks?"
Yes,
that's extremely inappropriate.
That's an excellent decision.
Yeah, and then you say, you know what, that's a good call. We were going to stand by that, but in the interest of moving forward, I think we can let that concept go. And it sounds like we're all agreed that we should go with the other one.
I just sent you guys a photo of the dinner I made the other night. I almost sent it to you while I was making it, but...
What the fuck?
Yeah. What am I looking at?
I thought you were coming out as a serial killer, and I briefly got really excited. No.
Daddy's hungry. No.
So, the duck. See, now, when I was doing client work, I used to think I was being, when I was a younger fella, I would always give, like, three designs. But I feel like I learned, if you give anybody more than one thing to look at, they're going to make a Frankenstein. Because it's the other smart thing to do. And this, you have to understand.
Oh, my God. The worst moment in my life when the client goes, it's like peanut butter and chocolate. Two great tastes that taste great together. Oh. And I'm like, excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom and kill myself.
Yeah, let's go with the orb design and put that in. We'll set that in Optima on there. It's like, whoa. Thank you, Johnny Ive. Yeah.
Hey, that's a beautiful building.
Oh, that thing?
It's a beautiful, why is it?
So those
bad?
Are those
God
are chicken apple sausages.
Mm-hmm. That's what those you lost me.
You're not looking. You don't look at things.
No.
What is this? I thought this was like a picture of like the Avatar people from the movie having sex with each other.
No, they use their tails.
It's
these
my
are
little
fingers.
Bespoke sausage forest.
All right, what do I have here? I see this is a picture very overexposed, and we are looking at a cast iron pan, and there's sort of a forest of mushrooms beneath below, and then a bunch of half sausages erect in defiance of God's will.
Just gravity sort of, and God's will.
They're sort of, it's sort of obscene. They're like curved
you think
a little
sort,
bit.
You think it's sort of obscene?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I made the Adel's chicken apple sausage, as I do. And I prepared four of them. And I realized there's a problem we've been running into, which is that they don't get all the way warmed up in the middle. And now, also, we haven't talked about this. I started cooking with lard, and it's changed everything. It's changed everything. You get a serious sear. But I realized I want to cut them in half.
Why is that? Is that because it has a higher smoke point?
Sure. It makes it cooks things and they get crunchy. Like when I do my sous vide ribeyes and then toss them in with a little bit of lard. Oh, sister. So anyway, I kind of cut the little wieners in half and I wanted to toast up the ends a little bit. It really is a horrible abortion to look at. And then we had extra mushrooms, so I threw those in.
Is this something your daughter will eat?
Mm-mm.
I didn't think so. <You're> not.
I prepared a special prepared a special meal for you. Wear this smock and headdress. So where were we? The museum stuff. But yeah, you called it the duck. Okay, so getting back. Anyway, we don't have to keep going on. You've got other things to read. But it is funny how, like, I don't know, you get like a Saudi tourist or something. Somebody's going to come to town. They're like, what is the most costly thing in this museum? And you go, oh, it's the fucking hourglass. And you're like, very good. I will have four. And then they go home and like, I bought you the most costly thing in the museum store. Because somebody will buy it. But that said, there's going to be 100 of these. So you guys are going to have to really get in there if you want this.
All right. Well, how do I send you? Should I send some stuff to the text message thread? Is that how we're doing it now? Nowadays?
Well, if you use the Google Doc, you could do that, but...
All right, I'm sending you... This is the new car that I think I should buy for myself.
Oh,
what do you guys think about this?
Oh, Bentley makes nice cars.
So this is a Bentley. This is the Bentayga Falconry by Mulliner. So this is a special custom Bentley that you use for falconry. I assume it's used by Saudi princes who travel.
By the staff,
you know, Zapier.
Prince Zapier's staff.
A natural continuation of the thinking that created the successful Bentayga fly fishing by Mulliner. This falconry kit showcases the attention to detail and innovative approach to bringing a customer's passions together with their personalized Bentley. The Bentayga Falconry by Mulliner is an exquisite installation designed to house everything you need for a successful falconry expedition. Fitted into the boot of your Bentayga, handcrafted by Bentley's bespoke commissioning
out of
division.
The boot of my Bentayga.
It is at once practical while delivering the pinnacle of luxury that Mulliner promises.
Oh my goodness!
Mulliner falconry set is made to order and features two bespoke units, which fit seamlessly in the rear of the Bentayga and keep every piece of equipment you will need for a successful falconry outing to hand. It features two bespoke units. They're using bespoke twice in the same paragraph. A master flight station and a refreshment case that are fitted to a movable tray for easy access. Now, also just to clarify, the refreshments are clearly for you, not the falcon.
Okay, that was my first question.
But they're three, I mean, look, it's like bullet thermoses and two tumblers.
Yeah.
Right?
It's for the bourbon that you're not allowed to drink in Saudi Arabia. What? Wait a minute. Inside the master flight station, you will find a stowage tray with individual compartments which can hold your GPS bird tracking unit, binoculars, and handcrafted leather bird hoods and gauntlets.
Look at the little drawer. It looks like a jewelry case. It's got little tiny hoods. It's got like a hood storage facility.
God,
binoculars.
Is that what those are? They're like little BDSM hoods for the Falcon.
For the Falcon Gimp.
Oh my fucking God. What is a GPS bird tracking unit?
I mean, I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
If you click up at the top, so you see in the breadcrumb path, you got home, World of Bentley. Click on Mulliner. And you can see some of their other special designs that they have.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
There's one here that's a celebration of Britishness. They got the Flying Spur. Mm-hmm. That takes interior luxury to another level.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, these are amazing.
Hallmark cities. No, no.
Mulliner features. Ooh, three new refrigerated
coolers. The Mulliner Limited Edition's Mulsanne Blue Train, a tribute to the spirit of the Bentley boys.
The Mulliner Picnic Hamper. Bentayga, the world's first genuine luxury SUV, was created to take exquisite luxury.
It's not an SUV! It's not an SUV!
At the wheel that day was Captain Wolf Barantaro, the most dashing of all Bentley boys. Mm-hmm. At the Carlton Hotel in Cannes, he accepted a wager that he could beat the Calais Marinerne or Blue Train back to Calais, and better still, he would be at his gentleman's club in London before the train even reached its destination. Mm. He was, by just 4 minutes, and history was made. Mm. I want to be the most dashing of all the Bentley boys, which I will be when I drive around with my falconry car. AP, in Saudi Arabia, people with knowledge of the planning for Trump's trip say that the caterers are planning to offer the president steak and ketchup alongside the lamb and hefty portions of rice on the menu. All of the meat will have been butchered by Sharia-compliant halal manner as per Islamic custom. That's nice. Wherever the president goes in the world, he still gets his well-done steak and ketchup. He's fatigued.
he's exhausted. Somebody, I read somewhere there was a on political Twitter, someone was talking about there was one actually guy who jumped in to say why he does this. Did you see that? There was one fella who stake-splained this by saying that, well, actually, if I were the kind of person that owned this sort of, first of all, I'd be very concerned about the safety of the foods and I'd want to make sure that it's well cooked. But also a well-done steak is very difficult to do. So that is personally the steak that I would test when I visit one of my facilities. And it's like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. You know what you ask for? You ask for a medium rare steak like an adult. And then you see how that turned out. Getting a perfect medium rare steak is really, really difficult.
Well, how is getting a well-done steak, in what world is that more difficult than a medium rare steak?
Medium rare steak is really hard to do.
Yeah, a well-done, I mean, any fucking idiot can make a well-done steak. You just cook it until it's black and there's no, and it's...
You could bake it. I mean, you could do fucking anything to it. You just hit it with a torch for 6 hours. There's nothing to it. I mean, there's no, and that's different from, say, like if you want like a Pittsburgh or, you know, what's the one, the black and blue, right? Or Signon or whatever. There's all these different ways. Those all mean things. That means you still want a crusty outside, but you want it to be, say, cold in the middle. All those things are I've found very difficult to do. And I've watched a lot of food TV shows.
Trump, I think he's not taking his caveman powder, because the thing is, once you connect with the ancient traditions of the caveman, you don't want your steak well done. You want a medium rare. You want a little bit of, you know, you want the juice and the blood.
They mark that as a turning point in the Paleolithic era, when we very first emerged from our caves and went to the online store to get powder, creating with this a whole new set of ancient traditions and rites.
Speaking of which, I have not actually tried this caveman powder yet, and I just opened it, and it sort of, an aerosolized, like, blast of powder came, like,
you got it too.
Puffing out.
You got cucked by your powder.
As soon as I unscrewed it, it just went straight into my face. It was offensive. All right, I'm going to just dump a
You go listen back. I think Alex and I know I very much had that same experience. On two separate occasions, I opened this and was covered with powder. I'm going to try opening it, see if I can do it without getting it everywhere.
Okay, it's going into the water.
Oh, God.
This is very exciting.
So they provided this little scoop for you, huh? That's the right amount to have?
Yeah, I really missed out on an opportunity, Merlin. You know how it comes with a little scoop? Yeah. I could have replaced that scoop with a giant ass one.
With like a fucking sand pail. Yeah. Wow, it's not really dissolving into this water.
It sure doesn't.
You got to get in there.
Yeah, really get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's really clumping up.
Keep going. You're not done.
The powder is too fine. Oh, it's all floating to the top. It's such a diarrhea-like consistency.
It's so easy to sit at President Obama's house and listen to other people drink the powder. It's a lot more.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. You haven't even gotten into it yet.
Get the stevia. Really get in there. Get the stevia.
Oh, my God.
Is like, stevia hitting you yet?
Oh, Jesus. It's bitter. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
It comes in waves.
For a powder. Here's the thing.
It tastes
powder
hot. It tastes hot. If you eat it on your finger, it's hot. Why does it taste hot?
For a powder that doesn't do anything, it has no benefit that they claim or advertise, you'd think that the least they could do is make it taste good. At least it should taste like one of those like powdered chocolate milks.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like when you go to like a GNC and buy one of those energy drinks that's really just a bunch of...
My eyes are watering. It's foul. It tastes
it's not
awful.
That bad.
Alex.
Okay, hold on.
It tastes awful.
It's really bad.
It's bitter. It's like, it tastes like,
Why does it taste hot? Try put a little, wet your finger, stick it in there, just a tiny bit. Does it taste like it's been warmed?
It's like bone meal.
Okay, so this is has anybody actually done this three times a day or three?
I haven't even tried it until now.
So Merlin, this is what I've been doing. I have in front of me a spoon that's about half filled with the powder, and you just eat it like the cinnamon gel.
No!
Oh, she's going. Oh my God!
I'm gonna be
the one that vomits this week.
Oh my God.
Also want to state for the record that 2 weeks ago when we did the coffee challenge, Alex vomited in the middle of the challenge and then edited herself out vomiting.
Ugh. See, I just did all the powder. Oh, God, it's in my teeth. Mm. You just swallowed the powder.
I may vomit. This is making me very nauseous.
I felt so weird. I can't get into it, but I'm just going to say that when I woke up the next morning, I felt so strange. I probably had a little too much CBD oil, but I basically woke up and I felt like I was tripping. And I don't know if it was the powder.
Can I ask you about the CBD oil?
Just a tiny, tiny bit.
Are you doing this? And if so, are you discussing it on a podcast? And which podcast is it?
I am. I don't want to talk about it.
That's why I'm asking you what podcast I should listen to hear your thoughts on it.
I do a podcast with a person who would not describe himself as a CBD advocate. Mm-hmm. But he seems to think that this stuff... has almost unlimited health benefits with almost zero risk of any kind, according to science.
Mm-hmm.
And has been like basically suggesting people there's really no toxic dose of this. And I'm like, stop saying that. Setting aside the litigious nature of what happens if somebody eats your powder and dies, like, don't advise people to just, it's not like water. I mean, even water's not safe at high amounts, turns out. But yeah, I've tried it. I can't really tell if it's working. Really? Yeah. You all right, buddy?
Are you getting a third wave?
It comes in waves. It tastes hot.
See, you have to think about it as an edible, a marijuana edible, let's say. I just got it all at once, and it's going to hit me later, but it's much easier to consume.
Why did it come with, in the box with this little jar of caveman powder, it came with a little pamphlet on jury nullification.
Citizen's rule book. So this looks like a religious tract. It's not even the registration on it's not right. It's a little bit wrong. It's got staples. It's very, very poorly printed. Rights come from God, not the state, begins the book. Handbook for jurors, give me liberty. And it comes with the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution.
It's fucking crazy. Who could ever read this and be convinced by it? It has like the Articles of the Constitution in it. It's like, what are you supposed to take away from this? It has like Bible quotes and the Constitution in it.
Like the Bible itself, I think it's mainly, you know, it's for show and not for growing. I think you're supposed to walk around with this, you know, and wave it at people at the subway if they give you any shade. I have the rules of the citizen here. Jury tampering? A jury has rights, powers, and duties.
One thing that I found really interesting about this is on the cover, there's a sort of old-timey halftone print, and you've got three sort of revolutionary era patriots with a huge flag waving in the background. And one of the guys, the one in the foreground, he's marching forward. He's sort of goose-stepping forward and with his knee-height socks and his petticoat. He's playing the flute, very intimidating. And then he has dressing.
It's the classic image of the fife and drum guys. It's like from a famous painting, isn't it?
Oh, please. And I don't think so. I've never seen it before.
You're kidding.
But the guy with the flute, he has a head dressing on. He has a head wound. Look at him. He's demented.
He's dressed for battle. He's got a head injury, and he's marching around. But he's no gun.
He's playing a flute. Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying? I think that once you have the head injury, the citizen's rule book starts to make a lot more sense.
Have either of you been to like a county fair in your life?
Mm-hmm.
These little pamphlets are everywhere.
The judiciary of the United States is the subtle core of sappers and miners constantly working underground to undermine the foundations of our confederated fabric. The federal judiciary, an irresponsible body for impeachment, is scarcely a scarecrow.
This works so well in
Gorka voice. Working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states and the government of all be considered into one. And then it just has like random, it has that crazy like syntax of like conservative idiots where they make every fourth word like bold and uppercase.
Yes. Yes.
Newsweek, the New York Times reports that ahead of Trump's trip to Saudi Arabia, foreign dignitaries have been sharing tips on the best way to deal with the president. A set of clear rules have emerged, according to the report. Keep everything short, don't assume Trump knows the country's history, and make sure to compare him favorably with former President Barack Obama. Perhaps most important, leaders were reminded to praise Trump for winning the Electoral College in November, something he has repeatedly stressed for months since taking office. I'm having a lot of trouble getting through this because as I'm moving my tongue, I can taste the powder. It tastes.
You're in
like
the fourth wave.
Bitter, sweet. I think it's in my sinuses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Foreign leaders were also urged to try to ignore comments Trump made during his presidential campaign and to stay, quote, in regular touch with the president, according to the Times.
The strategy of, they were talking about this on somewhere this morning. Just that strategy of people, like, I guess Merkel was one of the first to realize she was pretty stony and cold with him, but realized she's not talking to, you know, Werner Herzog. Like, you can get this guy on your side. And the phrase I've heard people using this week in referring to lots of things is the deliverable, right? So there's always the deliverable. And I think of deliverables as, like, you know, that's the assets or the things that you give to a client. Deliverable can also be, like, this is the thing that I get to hold up as having done, as something I've won, something I've achieved. And you just need to give him a deliverable. You let him hold a sword. You let him touch the orb. You give him a pretty necklace. Or you let him sign something and then hold it up to the cameras like a big boy. And it's another little piece of the puzzle is that if you flatter him, specifically, people are saying, this is the go-to strategy now, is to specifically compliment him on his extraordinary and completely unpredictable win in the election, in the Electoral College. And especially how he's doing so much better than Hillary would have. Are you doing okay, buddy?
Yeah.
Just take a spoonful. You did not fulfill your own challenge.
Nope. I failed this one.
You cucked yourself.
This powder cocked me so hard.
I've had at least four portions.
I may throw up. We'll see if I get to the end of this episode before I throw up. Is it hot in here? Are you sweating?
Well, as we have designed it to turn off the air conditioning,
I'm not well.
Oh, dear. Well, you did take a lot of. I think that's you're sweating out any estrogen you have because you just put a ton of testosterone in you.
It's a purge, yeah. Alex. He's purging all of his femininity.
Tommy and I had a call. So we got a call from, we got an email from Google AdWords a couple weeks ago. And Google was like, hey, we have a new program where we identify like businesses that have room for like a lot of growth. And then we help them get started on Google AdWords with like for free. Like we'll give you like lots of like data and analytics and help you like get started. And we want to like roll Secret Hitler into this program as one of our like pilot things. And I'm very suspicious of online advertising. I don't think that paying for online advertising works. I don't think anyone ever like purposefully clicks on an ad online.
Well, also, I mean, maybe to be fair, not for most people for most purposes.
Right. I mean, I think it works for like locksmiths is like one of the big categories. But, you know, the thing is, if it works for your category, you know, if people are Googling like locksmith in my area right now, right, and then you're going to make a quick rash snap decision, that's like the most expensive search. So it costs $1 billion. So I don't even know that it's still cost effective to do it. Like that market kind of takes care of that. But anyway, for like, you know, getting people to know about your board game or whatever, I don't think paid advertising really on search like really works. So anyway, we met with this guy. I was very, very skeptical. And essentially it's like a program where they like get you to spend some minimum. You commit to some minimum. They get you on Google AdWords. They like convince you that it's working. And then
fifth wave.
Oh Jesus! And then they try, and then I guess it's like the first one's free, but then you're like hooked, and you spend increasing amounts of money. And I was very skeptical of this, and I asked the guy, and I was like, in all the customers that you've ever worked with, you know, the dozens of people that you've worked with in this program, at the end of the period of them trying this thing, have you ever recommended to someone that they spend less money on ads? And the guy was like, no. Mm. And I was like, do you think that's a concerning sign that you're just sort of pushing people into ad buying? And he's like, well, it works for everyone. And the other thing I was like, at one point I was like, it's a little bit like alternative medicine. Like, you know, the patient takes the alternative medicine, and then the new age doctor is always like, well, you know, only three things can happen. Either the problem gets
better,
worse.
You don't, or you die.
Yeah, exactly. The problem gets worse, it stays the same, or it gets better. If it gets better, you say, we cured it. If it stays the same, you go, we arrested it. If it gets worse, you go, you need more of it. Like, there's never a scenario where you don't need more alternative medicine.
Did you see their announcement this week, though, about the new stuff that they're doing, the kind of chilling new stuff they're doing?
No. Oh, this sounds fun.
I can't find the article I read yesterday, but it did inspire me to go in and make sure I'm opted out of lots of things and that I went.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, this is from memory because I don't have it in front of me. If you can find it, Alex, put it up. But they are doing some dark magic with basically being able to take 2 to 3 pieces of information about you and be able to. The basic idea is they're going to be able to show credit card activity based on how you've interacted with an ad to be able to show that the ad is working. And so I guess there are some ways that you can sort of avoid this. If you go into the privacy section, I would say shut off the tailored ads, like all of that stuff. But like, I sure would like to learn a little more about this. Have you heard about this, Alex?
I have. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things that they're like, oh, roll back. And then in 5 years when the AI, like their faux AI knows everything about us, we won't care anymore. I have a quick thought experiment, though, for you guys. Let's say, you know, the Google ad searches that get clicked on the most are taxis in my area and locksmiths in my area. Have you ever thought about just in order to better humanity, buying up some of those and then you like drive up to the person and you're wearing like a Steve Bannon mask or something and you're like, that's why you never click Google ads and
that went a very different way than I had expected. I thought you were going to say like have things about saving humanity. But like buying mesothelioma rates.
No, but like you should never click on the first locksmith. You should never click on the first cab thing.
That's how you get ants.
No, but anyone who's ever clicked on one of those like locksmiths that pays to advertise, like it's always like everyone has so many horrifying
huge
stories.
Scam.
It's always like a fucking serial killer.
Was that Reply
exactly.
All? Was that a Reply All? They did that.
Pretty sure I'm stealing.
Well, they talked about the taxi, the guy who found taxi.
That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah. That show really annoys me, but I still listen to it. Reply All Locksmith.
I just I bet I could file as a 501c3. Like it would work out. You just And then maybe you do take them to your destination, but like an awkward Lyft or Uber driver, you talk about why you do this and the bad parts of your life, and it would be great.
Oh, it'd be kind of like your own Dismal Land. Like, yeah, you would do yeah, go and do exactly. some kind of Dada live performance about what's happening.
Yeah, it's art, really. I mean, and then
costly.
You have a you give them you give them an hourglass, and you're like, please look at my nano balls.
Would you like me to open any doors for you? Or I am also a locksmith in a Steve Bannon mask.
Grab my nano balls. Together we will stop time itself.
Prince Zapier, help us take flight. Alex, you started to ask us about county fairs, and then you also sent us pictures of tiny fake babies.
I forgot about this. Well, I was trying to find the PDF of this exact pamphlet we received from InfoWars, but I had a sudden flashback about one of the worst county fairs I went to, where there was like this pro life group giving out small fetuses, like small models.
Gotta catch them all.
I've gotten those.
Yeah. And they would just like give you a handful, and they're like, this is how many babies are dying right now. And it's really upsetting.
Are the real ones wrapped in ribbon? This is so disturbing.
Yeah, and no, but what was worse is one time I got some that were actually erasers because you're erasing their lives.
Oh, that's pretty clever.
Give me some candy fetuses. I'll pop 8 in my mouth at once. Eat them with a spoon.
Oh, so innocent.
It's
so
oh,
deliciously
so
innocent.
They're like a little choking hazard. I love it.
I want the little black baby. Yeah. He's so cute. Look at that. And why the price is 39 cents to $1.95? Is that a result of bulk buying?
I have a feeling.
Bulk buying.
Yeah. Let's see.
Goldenberg shoes. Oh, they're
the
so little.
The top model is called the precious ones.
Oh no! Have you seen them in the box? What they look like?
Yeah.
Oh my god! They look like chocolates.
I know.
Oh, I want chocolate babies.
Yeah, they're very upsetting peeps.
The precious one is the most realistic fetal model ever developed. It's beautiful detail, softness, and weight can really move hearts and change minds. Oh, here it is. Okay, if you buy one, it's $1.95. If you buy 10,000, 39 cents.
Exactly. You know how people have, I still have dreams about going to math class and not being prepared and not being able to figure out sine and cosine and stuff like that. But I also have nightmares where I have somehow gotten, I've just somehow gotten pregnant and I don't know why. And it's like I am in this alternative life where I'm this straight person and suddenly I'm having a baby and there's a baby shower and then I wake up in this cold sweat. And I always remember the fetus eraser.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
Alex, I have a question for you. I have a lot of gay women, married gay women friends.
And but how are you sure that they're gay?
Well, they're married to each other.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, and they're having they're starting to have children.
Mm.
And one of them is the one, you know, the one that has the child.
Are you asking if I'm going to be the dad?
No, I'm asking, here's my question. How do you decide?
How do you decide which one leads?
Yeah, because like, how do you decide? Do you flip a coin?
Yeah. There's an official lesbian coin and one.
No, how do people decide this? Because it's like.
It's the official lesbian coin.
Like, no one wants to be
it's
the one to have the kid, right?
Babies.
That's like a pretty big.
I don't want an official lesbian coin so much.
Official lesbian challenge coin.
The lesbian challenge coin.
If you become a member of the Dubai Friday Network today, we will send you one official lesbian challenge coin. It's collectible.
You see somebody your same height who's dressed like you, same haircut, you just whip out the coin and then go, oh yeah, U-Haul.
Do you see what I'm saying? Is that being the one to actually have the kid, you're taking a pretty big, you know, you're taking a pretty big bullet for the team here, you know?
Oh, indeed. Well, there are some women who definitely want to have that experience. There's a lot of straight women who don't want to have that experience.
Let me give you an example, right? Like if I'm married to a woman, she will want to have a child because that's the way that the two of us can have a child, right? She's pretty much going to have to step up and do her thing
this
here.
With such assurance. Hey, if I'm the woman, she's going to have a child.
I'm just saying, like, if we decide we're having a kid, she's having it because that's what has to happen. But if it's two women, it's like you could either one could realistically like be the one to step up and take this bullet for the team.
This is honestly something that people discuss all the time, and it's like you kind of have to decide. All right, who do you think has the better genes?
I bet it's not as complicated as it seems, because I mean it's sort of like, well, hey, you're closer to the remote, could you change the channel? Hey,
exactly.
Could you top off my water? Hey, would you bear the child? Yeah, totally, I'm into that. I would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's that? 9 months? Sure.
Nothing.
Who's
everybody's nice to you? You get to complain.
Exactly. Like you get the Postmates account where anything comes to you and
oh, that's a dangerous account.
It seems like it must be a really difficult choice, because among the couples that I know, they're both like kind of career women. Like they're both, you know, have like full time jobs. So there's not like an easy choice of like one of them will be out of work for.
So have you brought this up to them and being like, so what?
No, I don't really know how to broach the subject.
Hey,
listen, about that baby.
So do you use the coin? I have one. Would you like to use it? I don't know. I don't want tiny humans.
I bet, couldn't it also be, I mean, I don't want to cisplain this, but couldn't it also be like who has the better benefits and likes their job more at that time? Couldn't part of it be? Because, I mean, you know, I remember my friend back in Tallahassee saying, like, the entire experience, stem to stern, of up to the point of the baby getting pushed out, cost him $50 because of the amazing insurance that he had. The entire thing was paid for. It can be very costly. You saw the thing? Did you see the thing about the guy who got bitten by a snake and ended up owing like over $100,000 in medical fees?
Oh yeah,
could be fake news, but that, you know, it's that. I would have to imagine, certainly, well, the clear thing is there somebody who's going, oh, I want to have a baby, put a baby in me? Like, if there's that character in the relationship, well, then I guess that seems kind of obvious. But I bet there's probably lots of practical parts to it. And like you say, genetics as well. But the coin ultimately decides in every lesbian relationship.
It's also who likes a turkey baster more, really.
How you feeling, Max?
Not great.
Not good.
Have you and Mel done this math?
That's a very personal question.
Yes, Max. Yes, we have many. So, yeah, well, that's the thing. I like my job a lot, so I would not have the child. However, in terms of, like, she's an only child, where my parents had a lot of kids, so it's like, I don't know. We don't know.
Oh,
we could have a hostile fetus.
Who's got the best shot, sort of.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So again, the coin, really. who has, like, lived the longest in your family? Like,
Obey the coin.
it does, you get into weird territory trying to make the right choice.
A lot of the only friends I have who have had kids are like, okay, you have the first one and I'll have the second one.
Whoa, I didn't even consider that.
Yeah. That's a really good idea.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure it became popular after the movie The Kids Are All Right. Like, it didn't occur to anybody that, oh yeah, we can both bear children.
But like, what if you don't like the way yours turned out? Like, let's say you go first. And maybe you got
You get a dud. Sometimes you get a dud.
Yeah.
You gotta throw it back. I'm not gonna serve you to my family. And you say, so you get a dud, like, do you get to call the next one? Do you get a do-over? You say, hey, look, give me another
sometimes
shot
you have
at
a
this.
Kid. Sometimes you have a kid. He grows up to write explainer articles for Vox, and you're like, we're not doing that again.
So I flipped a lesbian coin for a week, and you're not going to believe what happened. Could you both be pregnant at the same time? What if you make it a contest?
Oh God!
Oh my God!
Two babies,
no
someone
waiting. Who did that? Yeah. Oh, this
you do?
Disaster. Yeah. I mean, good for them. Good for them. Good for you guys. Well, they're
that
also
seems
the people
like a
who,
lot of work.
They also ate their the placenta,
yes.
The placentae of
yes.
Each of their children, and they tried. They had a doula. You know, they wanted to have their kids at home, and you know that always works out fine.
runs that place.
But you're forgetting that we have a much easier route, and that's just you kind of can. There are many kids up for adoption, and it really, the bar is pretty low. It used to be like, gay couples, meh. But now it's like, oh, gay couples with jobs? Like, here, let's just hand them off. You sure you just want one? You know, you can take two. And they're like, if the coin isn't for you, adoption is on the table.
Ask your doctor if the lesbian coin is right for you.
I judged a this week. I judged a startup showcase for high school students. So it was basically me and a panel of judges sat in the high school auditorium, and teams of high school kids came up and pitched their startup to us, and then we like ranked it on a rubric, and the winning one got $2,500.
Oh God, is this like Y Combinator Junior?
Well, I think it's actually a pretty cool program to offer in high schools. It's like when I was a kid, there was DECA, which was sort of like making business plans and stuff, I think, in some sort of competition format. And this is way better because it like speaks to what people are actually doing now, which is like figure out some sort of like entrepreneurial hustle. But I was very depressed. The whole process was very depressing to me. So there were like it's very interesting seeing what it's the second year I've done it. I do it because the guy who organizes it at the school district is an old friend of mine. But basically, it's fascinating seeing what the kids come up with because they're like totally constrained by their experiences as high school students. Like they're trying to come up with startups, but the whole space they can sort of conceive of is like the world of a high school student.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of gadgets. There was like a pizza cutter that sliced the pizza into even size slices. Cause like when you're a high school student in a fairly well off, like, you know, white district, like one of the biggest problems in your life is that you get a slice of pizza that's smaller than someone else's.
Not everybody needs a well.
Yeah. Last year we picked the winner was a product that I actually use and I really like and I endorse and it was awesome. It's called this thing called the Hoodie Hoop, and it's like a long thin sort of acrylic like band, and at the end there's an alligator clip. And you use this so when the string of your hoodie comes out in the washing machine, you clip the thing and you fish it back through the hoodie. It's fucking brilliant.
Holy shit.
You push it instead of pull it.
You push this little thing through. Whoa. Use the alligator clip to clip the hoodie string, and then you pull it back through and it brings the string with it. Oh, it's so man. Easy. I literally cannot do this. Like Veronica can sort of like fish it through. I cannot. So if she's out of town and my hoodie string comes out, I'm fucked.
No, my hoodie.
Yeah. So I just have to wait for her to come home to do it. So the Hoodie Hoop is a pretty cool product. This year
I just picture an ad where Veronica's like, bye, honey, and then you're like, oh no, my
just ill-advisedly, you get some cold lasagna out of the refrigerator, and the door closes on the string. You start walking away to enjoy your food. Zip! Oh no, my hoodie. Has this ever happened to you?
Anyway, so this year there were some really cool pitches. The one that I liked the most was this team of two girls who made this kind of Shark Tank-y contraption that was like a water bottle that screwed together in compartments like a bento box. So there was like a top and then different like sort of almost like false bottoms that screwed out. And so what they conceived of was different modules. So they had one that was like a thermos, so you could have a hot beverage and a cold beverage. It was one that was like storage for like your snacks or your pills, so you could have like almonds in there.
Your powders.
There was one that was a battery case. So you could have a water bottle with like a USB battery on the bottom that I thought was pretty cool. But I also thought there would be like a thriving market for this for like going to festivals, because you're allowed to bring a water bottle into like Pitchfork, but you can't bring, you know, like whiskey. But this thing has a false bottom, so you fill it with your liquor, and you can bring that right into a music festival or your weed.
All right, let me stop you there, Barbara. I got some notes. Have you thought about the uses for drugs and alcohol?
I didn't know how to bring this up to the high school students, but that would clearly be the market for it.
It doesn't have to be meth, but I'm just pitching here.
It could be anything you're not allowed to bring into a music festival.
It could be a ecstasy. Small knife. It could be a weapon. Exactly.
It could be your Molly. It could be anything. Acid.
It could be an unlimited amount of CBD that definitely does not have any
literally,
negative side
literally
effects.
Literally no toxic dose.
The more you take, the better you get.
Well, you either get better,
or you
stay the same, or you get worse.
Hakuna Matata.
But the one that the other judges like were all like fucking entranced by. They were all like bamboozled by these kids who came up. They all wore matching t-shirts, which to me was a sign immediately. I was very suspicious of whatever they had to pitch.
Red flag.
But they had this thing called called like Penny Pincher or something like that, or Penny Planner. And the premise of this one was so it's an app that kids use and parents use together. So kids use it as a shopping app. They pick something that they want, like a toy or something that they have to save up some money for, and they pick it on the app. So they showed an example of a girl who picks an American Girl doll. She really wants that. Puts it on the app. Then the parents on their app, they list chores that need to be done around the house. So they're like, mow the lawn, $1. Fold the laundry, $1.50. And the kids do these chores, and they tick off the chores, and then it applies the money towards their thing, and they see it expressed as like a percentage of the purchase. So they can be like, oh, my American doll, girl doll is a 15% paid for by household chores. You know, I just need to keep saving. And they had a whole thing of how it's going to teach the next generation the values of like thrift and saving and planning. And the judges are all sort of businessy people and startup people. They were all older. I was the youngest one by far. They were all old. Some of them were like actual old people, like 70-year-old, you know, retired businessmen. And like one of the guys was like, said, he's like, you know, when I was a young boy, my grandfather took me out on the farm and there was a drought, and he pointed to the silo and he said, grandson, this is why you always need to save. And that's an important lesson. He's like, you're teaching that lesson to kids today. And I fucking hated this app. I thought there was so much wrong with it. So first of all, their revenue model, they had three ways they were going to make money. Number one, they were going to take a percentage of all of the chores that the kids got paid for.
Oh, my God!
What? So they're basically taking these kids and holding them upside down and taking the change that falls out
jingle,
of their pocket.
Jingle, jingle.
They're the bullies taking the lunch money.
The other thing I didn't like is just conceptually, it felt like they felt like they're like a mining company paying people in scrip. It's like here's the company currency that you can only spend at the company store. It's like you can only buy the toys, you know, that are listed in the app. So that's part number two, is that they would like also get paid by toy companies to market toys to kids.
Oh, gross. God.
Oh my God.
And then way number three that they came up, these were sophomores and juniors in high school. And then way number three that they came up was they would then sell the kids' data back to the companies. So they would take the info of what the kids were shopping for and sell them. So it's like each one of these methods that they're going to make money on is worse than the next. So it's like completely unethical. But furthermore, the whole point of kids doing chores is so that they learn to do work. That is the point of doing the chores. It's not actually so that the laundry gets folded. It's so that kids learn the value of a job well done. And you can't do that by giving them a monetary reward and having some fucking gamified system where they're getting microcredits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, it's so weird though too. Like, you're not learning about saving if you're like, all right, I just gotta put one more dish in the dishwasher to get my American Girl doll.
Right. Like, you're basically buying a toy on layaway and then working for it. It's a debt. No, seriously, it's a debt metaphor.
But it's a Zeno's paradox. Where like every time you're almost ready to buy your doll, they come in and dip out a few extra pennies, because it helps you learn a lesson.
There was this great thing by Stuart Butterfield from Slack, and it's called Stuart Butterfield's Rules of Business, which is sort of a jokey title, but it's such a fucking great piece. But one of his things that he says is, every job you do has your signature on it. When I was around 10 or 11 years old, my father offered me $10 to move a cord of recently delivered firewood from the driveway into the garage and stack it up inside. I'm old. $10 was a great deal of money back then. I managed to get all the firewood inside, but rather than it being stacked against the wall, it was more or less evenly distributed across the floor of the garage. I expected my payment, but instead got some advice. Every job you do has your signature on it. Do you really want to sign that? I always remembered that, and if I'm going to do something, I make every effort to do it right. I also properly stacked the wood afterwards, even though it took forever. I got paid in the end. And I was thinking about that. I was like, that is the essential lesson that you're like depriving kids by creating this like gamified like microtransaction. You're making all work and all projects in the house like totally fungible. Like, well, I can do this for $1 or this for $2. There's no value of like learning to do a thing you don't want to do.
I can confirm that struggle is real. First of all, yes. I mean, what you're saying, the words that your mouth are making, those words are good words, and it's true. It's really, really difficult in practice. But I agree with what you're saying. There's a word that I
frequently introduce that I probably am very hypocritical to even bring up, but the word proper. And here I mean it more in the way that British people use proper. That is the proper way to do this. And you hear the, pops up in like Doctor Who and Harry Potter or whatever, but we can do this and we can half-ass this, but I don't think there's anything too paradoxical or hypocritical about reducing the number of things that you do and then trying to do a proper job with it when you do it. As against, I mean, I guess the extreme example, the opposite of that, maybe a straw man, is the kind of person who is just constantly half-assing everything and accomplishing almost nothing. And so I like the idea. First of all, I think Stuart's a very interesting and very, very funny, very smart guy. I think that's good advice to consider that, like, if you only try to do a good job at the stuff you think other people can see that's important and builds your brand, you don't become a better person. You become a better person by sweating the really silly stuff, like how you prepare this food. There's all these things, and you don't have to be precious about it, but like just the way that you make your bed, you know, can make a difference in a small way. Even if it doesn't matter to anybody but you, it's still worth doing properly.
Well, the other thing with this company was that they had this complicated app that involved microtransactions flying back and forth and an approval process.
I'm
and, like,
sure
advertising.
Parents are going to know how to use that.
Well, forget that no one will know how to use it. They also didn't make the app, right? They showed pictures of how it would look. God. Whereas the water bottle, the girls who were doing the water bottle in the compartments, they had actually built a functional prototype on a 3D printer, and it screwed together and it showed all the different components, and like they had already called a manufacturer and figured out the pricing and had a plan to make it. And I was like, one of these groups like did the project that mm-hmm. they were supposed to do, and the other group didn't, right? You're looking at a picture of something that could be versus a thing that is. How do you not pick the thing that is? But regardless, I was the only one who liked the water bottles. But the other one that was really that I thought maybe I could get on board with is like a consensus, like we could sort of build a coalition to overcome the penny pincher or whatever, was this thing called, I don't know, like the some sort of like stupid like box where it's like it was like a shopping. It's like a Shopify site where you can pick out a bunch of like candy and school supplies and shit, and you tick off the things that you want if you're a parent, and then you send it to your kid in college. So it's like a shopping service of like sending a care package to your kid in college. And
that's a service, not a company.
Well, with the exception that they were already doing it, so they already had customers and they were already turning a profit.
Where were they sourcing? Were they buying stuff from Costco?
Probably, okay. Yeah. I think they were buying, like, you know, bulk candy and office supplies and then selling it at a high markup. Hmm. So it was like, this is not $1 million business, but it's high school students. And you're judging them based on, like, what have they done with the constraints that they have?
It's nice that it's not all apps. I mean, because, you certainly have run into this, both of you, I'm sure, with design. And I've gotten a little bit with design, development, all kinds of things. Is that, there you could push back on your plumber about how much it's going to cost to unplug the poop in your pipes. But the truth is, like, you're going to pay whatever it takes because you understand this is hard work. You understand this is important work. You understand it takes time. You understand that the pipes, aren't free and that labor's not free. But there's something so, what's the word I'm looking for, feels inessential or light or easy about both the design and development. It feels that way. And we've all been on both sides of this. There's the one like, oh, it's just a button guy over here, versus us going like, no, you don't understand. Like, there's so much we have to understand about the way you would use this app. Because putting up a few JPEGs that you made in Sketch or whatever, like, yeah, but I mean, is that an app that somebody's going to want to use all the time? Because there's so many apps that I get where the product, like, even if there is a hardware component, like I've been trying all kinds of different cameras, wireless cameras, security cameras, trying to find inexpensive ones where I don't have to buy a canary in order to look at this one area. The experience of setting up the camera is so bad because the app that they make you use is just a crappy web view that is not optimized for anything. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I admire people who go beyond the it's just a button. Here's some JPEGs I made, fund me. Because, like, the real art of that is in crafting something where the UI and the UX feels very personal and to use your work, Max, bespoke.
Yeah, anyway, so I tried my damnedest. I tried to 12 Angry Men it, but we only had like 10 minutes to decide after the thing, and everyone wanted to go with the... they were like, well, if I had $1 million to invest in this, I would definitely invest in this app because, oh shit, the kids also, what the other thing they did was they put a bunch of bank logos on the screen and they were like, we imagine ourselves partnering with these banks in the future. And they were like, because I had asked at one point, I was like, well, how will you make the microtransactions work? Because like the credit card fees are actually more than like the kids are getting paid sometimes, right?
Right.
Like once you have like a 12 cent credit card fee and you're taking your commission and it's like a 50 cent chore, it's like, well, shit, that's now the kid's not even really getting paid, right? So they were like, well, we're going to partner with the banks and they'll give us the transactions for free. And the banks will want to work with us because we'll have this huge user base of people, of kids using it. And the banks will want to reach all the kids. And I was like, well, it's a fucking chicken and the egg because the banks, it's like you need to have a partnership with the banks for your app to work. But the banks will only work with you to get your user base. So which one is it? Do you have the user base or do you need the bank to make your thing work?
Well, and anyway, it's also a little bit like the people on Shark Tank who are like, well, we've been in contact with some of the largest retailers in the world. And they go like, oh, like who? And they go, well, like Target and Walmart. And like, oh, so did they place an order? And like, oh, no, but we've been calling them.
Right, exactly. Anyway, the final thing I'll say about this that bothered me spiritually about it is it's an app. It's like, it's so interesting to me. These are high school kids and they immediately, when they're sort of told, like, make a business that makes money and, like, you know, sort of like cargo cult your way into, like, entrepreneurship, you know, in the way that, like, you know, you look at TV and you watch Shark Tank on TV and you're like, I'm going to do what these people are doing. The way that they perceive business and the way they think to be good at it is to essentially make something predatory on a group that's, like, less able than they are. And so the only group they can imagine to, like, that they can take advantage of are kids younger than them.
Wow.
So there was actually another group. There was another group that also pitched a thing for kids younger than them that helped them save their change and had the same model of like, well, we'll take a few cents. And it's like, this is a, like, no one needs help with this. Like, parents don't actually need an app to pay their kids for chores. Nobody needs help saving their change in an app. Like, these are predatory apps that solve a non-existent problem. And the only people that would do them are suckers. And you know that. You have a sort of P.T. Barnum, like, sucker relationship with the users of this thing.
Or as you say here, with the investors. Because if you know the kind of buttons that you want to press with these investors, they could go, oh, yes, that's exactly the kind of thing. Oh, it's a great bootstrap story. Like, this is good for my brand to support something like this.
Ugh. Yeah, absolutely. It just made me very uneasy. It was like the ideology of capitalism is getting through to these, like, you know, whatever, like 16-year-old kids in a very clear way of that. Ugh. When they're told to start a business, they immediately like find the group that I can take advantage of.
Mm. Can we talk about how Trump has dementia now?
Boy, that article was a hell of a read.
I didn't read it. Can you summarize it?
Alex?
Trump has dementia.
Okay, let me take a shot at this. Alex, I think you mentioned, I'm very uncomfortable discussing this. I just want to stipulate. But it's another one of those articles, or like Syracuse and I just recorded a show where we talked about that, is Disney ruining Pixar, article in The Atlantic, and how frustrating it is when you can observe the same things or see the same kinds of results as somebody who's writing the article, but you completely disagree with their approach. The thing I think you brought up last week, Alex, was like, or was it Max? If you go back and you watch interviews with Donald Trump in the 1980s, he's very definitely Donald Trump. But we I don't know if this made it in the show last week, but you know, if you go and watch this, like, he's maybe not the smartest guy in the world, but he's very temperate and he speaks in sentences. He's able to insert, dependent clauses without tripping over himself, without changing the topic. He's able to get to not only the end of a sentence, but in some cases, he's able to speak extemporaneously an entire paragraph that is not fragmented, broken, disjointed, or ultimately just turns into some kind of, you know, thing about his personal insecurity at that moment. Whereas today, like, once you go back and before we even get into this article, if you go back, we'll try and find some of these videos to put in, but like him on Larry King, him being, you know, even like Letterman, you compare that to where he is today, it does seem like something has changed. That's all I'm comfortable diagnosing about this. And if you want to go further, Alex, maybe talk more about what this specifically said. They went out and talked to experts for this article.
I mean, no one can definitively say what's going on. Like, they're never going to let a doctor touch him. Nothing is going to be public. But, you know, it came out after Reagan left office that he probably did have Alzheimer's while in the final years of his presidency. And even if you watch The Apprentice, like the early, and again, I have gone full left-wing conspiracy and 25th Amendment in this, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but just watching these interviews and watching how his TV appearances that were scripted, that mm-hmm. he just had to say the words from the teleprompter versus, like, you know, the words he had to say from the teleprompter like 3 years ago, there is a distinct difference. Like,
yeah,
it's creepy. And like, he can, like you said, he can finish a sentence. Sometimes he expands on the question he's being asked. Like, he can.
It's when you see them really typed out. And when you, and I'm not saying this because if the guy has problems, that sucks. But like, when you actually read these aloud, so can I read a little bit from this article?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ben Michaelis, a psychologist in New York City, performed cognitive assessments at the behest of the New York Supreme Court and criminal courts and taught the technique at a hospital and university. Quoting, there are clearly some changes in Trump as a speaker, unquote, since the 1980s. And this guy, Dr. Who, does not support Trump. Including a clear reduction in linguistic sophistication over time with simpler word choice and sentence structure. In fairness to Trump, he's 70, so some decline in his cognitive functioning over time would be expected. New paragraph. Some sentences or partial sentences would, if written, make a second grade teacher despair. Quoting, this is Trump, we'll do some questions unless you have enough questions, he told a press conference in February. Last week, he told Lester Holt, when I did this now, I said, I probably maybe will confuse people. Maybe I'll expand that, you know, lengthen the time because it should be over with, in my opinion, should have been over with a long time ago. From the time I took office till now, you know, it's a very exact thing. It's not like generalities. And so basically the thesis is here, I think, that they are suggesting that there appears to be, how does one avoid saying brain damage? That something's not quite right with his cognition and his.
Even if it's not brain damage, the guy, like, he's still a fuckface in the old, you know, interviews from the 80s. But
well, as a medical doctor, I'm not allowed to diagnose someone as a fuckface without personally examining them.
Ask your doctor if fuckface is right for you.
All right. Anyway, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. What did you guys think?
Hold on. Mac, I can't believe Max does not have an opinion on this at all. Like, it is shocking.
Anytime good news comes along that suggests we're making any progress, Max feels the obligation to point out that nothing's ever going to happen.
And I can't tell
you. No.
You're enjoying it wrong.
He does have his laptop, so who...
I'm not paying attention. No, listen. Here's the situation with this. Do you remember... Jesus, I think it was in the Top Chef podcast. We were talking about, like, Martian thinking, like, that there's a cool thing in the Martian where when Matt Damon is, like, trying to survive, he, like, looks at what – there's no point in going, I wish I had a spaceship. What he does is he looks at what's in front of him and this is what I have. I have a bag of my shit and I have these potatoes. This is what I can work with. Like, this is what's available. There's kind of no point of being optimistic or pessimistic or wishful thinking or any of that. When you get into that life or death thinking or that engineering systems thinking, you know, you think in terms of just like affordances and capabilities. What can I do? How much does it cost? Mm-hmm. What can happen here? That's the reality. That's sort of the real politic scenario of if you're worried about Trump, you got to focus on the things that can stop him and create material conditions that stop him or slow him down, and you got to not give a shit about the rest of it. He is never going to be diagnosed with dementia or removed from office for being demented, even if he gets 10 times as demented as he is now, even if he regularly shits his pants in public. His Fox News will go, well, it's the president, it's actually a power play, and it's a classic power move. The president should shit his pants. It makes his enemies nervous.
That's
it's
Bill.
A great
that's
move.
Bill talking. But the Bill, who's the guy you like? Bill, the guy
Bill
who
O'Reilly?
Thinks. No. The guy on Twitter, Bill Mitchell.
Bill Mitchell. Yeah.
No,
Bill Mitchell's going to shit himself in solidarity.
See, on Fox, they would say, this is really bad for national security that they mention that the president is pooping. Who leaked the poop?
That's right. And then Sean Spicer would come on and he would say, the president has never shit himself. And the next day that Trump would go online and he would go, yeah, of course I shit myself.
I've literally never shat.
No, I mean, listen, he's never going to be removed for this. It's never going to affect him. But meanwhile, he is actually doing a bunch of evil shit, like taking away people's health care. He's trying to pass this budget right now that has a $2 billion math error in it that they refuse to recognize. That's things that actual voters care about in their real lives. I mean, Trump is defunding libraries around the country, giving huge tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires who will never spend that money and back into the economy. Like, there's legitimately evil things that affect people's everyday lives happening, and that's what we've got to focus on. Like, if you want to stop Trump, find your nearest congressman that voted for AHC and talk about that. Doesn't matter if the guy's demented or not, he's still going to sign the laws. So
I think we both definitely agree with you, but that's not what the Fox News moms are going to be like, uh-oh, this guy. And you're right. He's never going to be removed from office. But I'm curious, because you've worked on a bunch of campaigns, what happens if the staff decides that this person is unwell? Not even like mentally, but like what happens if they just physically can
When Nixon was being impeached, he had a real problem with alcohol. He was like muttering to himself. He wouldn't sleep. He would stay up all night, walk up and down the hallways of the White House and yell at the paintings. And his staff contacted, I guess the Pentagon, and they said, listen, if this guy gives an order to launch nuclear missiles, check with us first, right? Don't just launch them.
Jesus Christ.
And right. The Pentagon came back and said, sorry, it's not constitutional. It's not how it works. President's the commander-in-chief. If he gives the order to launch, there's no mechanism in place to slow that down.
There's all kinds of ways the 25th Amendment route could be extremely bad news, not least of which is it would be surpassingly difficult to really actually really, really, really take away his power via that method. And it's very long and strung out. But also, I realize this already seems like very old thinking to bring up this idea from November, but like, let's be careful what we're talking about normalization. Let's be careful about what we say it's okay to do. Right. Because they're going to use that against our guy. Like, do we want to get into a case where we're 25th amendmenting our president a lot? And I would say we absolutely do not.
I'm not as sympathetic to that argument, just because we keep saying, like, well, if we stoop to their level, then we'll all be at their level. But the reality is they're down in the fucking dirt. And if we don't fight in the dirt, then we'll never win anything. Like, then we'll still be in the dirt and we'll lose.
Okay, I get that. I want to be careful. It's sort of like any good heist movie. Like, where somebody finds a duffel bag full of money in a tree, and then they got to split it up and hide it and do all the stuff in that kind of that sort of a genre of movie. And the thing that makes that genre of movie is the way that this thing that should be this really great thing comes along, and then you manage to tear each other apart, undermine each other, and potentially kill each other in order to protect the good thing and keep it all for your own little Smeagol. And I just want to be careful how much we tear down in inefficient or ineffective attempts to do what we think we're trying to do. That I think we're swinging pretty broad on some of this stuff. And I just want to be careful how much of that we do.
I mean, I don't know, but I don't think saying like, oh, this man is mentally incompetent. Like, I shouldn't be president. Like, I'd be hallucinating. Like that I was living in Hogwarts and all the presidents are talking to me. Like, somebody, that person should not be in charge of the free world. I don't know. You can't punch down on the president. Like, that's not a thing that can happen.
He doesn't read it all the way through, Alex. Don't be unkind. I gotta put his name.
It's just. What's the point? It's not gonna hurt him. So, why obsess? Or it's like, honestly, like, one of the other things that bothers me is like, whenever the guy fucking says a weird malapropism or his staff or whatever, and then everyone on Twitter has to have a day of jokes about it. Of like, I'm trying to think of whatever latest example, but
the hand or the orb or any of that stuff. Well, you're talking specifically about when he misspeaks.
When he misspeaks, when he says some dumb fucking banal Trump thing, yesterday everyone was joking about, he said, I just got back from the Middle East while he was in Israel. And like, everyone has to do a whole fucking they have like a fucking, tight five at the Comedy Store. They have to have like a chunk on like, just got back from the Middle East on Twitter. And it's like, why? Like, does he have to drag, like, do we all have to like... You know, we did this for Bush, too. It was like, the wings take flight on the dreams of the bird, or whatever dumb shit he would say, or, You got to put food on your family. It's like, I don't want to hear about that for 8 years. Just let it go. Like, talk about, like, and furthermore, like, you can't win an election like that. Like, the American people don't want to hear you make fun of the guy that they voted for and find palatable. Like, you can find him unpalatable, but you have to accept that people who voted for Trump found him palatable. So you're never going to get anywhere by telling them what fucking idiots they are. You have to tell them that he's taking their health insurance. So it's like, if you can't dignify, I mean, whatever, like, call the guy names all you want, but
that might be the Han and Chewie of this particular adventure that pops up at the last minute to save everything. I think if it is communicated to enough people, it might be pretty shocking to some of his strongly support base exactly what's going to happen with their health care and insurance. I think it could be very startling.
Like, you tell the I just, people who watch cable news aren't going to the library, and it sucks. And what, like, you go to the mom in Missouri who nobody knew voted, and is like, hey, this guy, he cares about you, but he's not able to understand your needs. And
it's still,
how this
he's still
works.
Better than Hillary.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that and isn't it, that the reaction? It's like, the more it goes, yeah. Even setting aside the what do you call it? The feedback effect, the kickback error. What's it called? The what's the thing we talked about? The cognitive error, where when you try to dissuade somebody, it just makes them dig in more. I mean, that's their guy.
Blowback effect.
Yeah, blowback effect. Like, this is their guy. This is their man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now I'm sad.
Challenge. Alex, what was your challenge this week?
I didn't have a challenge this week.
Merlin,
what was your challenge this week?
I didn't have a challenge this week.
Oh, was it my challenge?
Well, technically you challenged us to do powders, but we the original challenge for last week, not that it matters, was to watch and be prepared to discuss the movie Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And I think you, as you do by fiat sometimes, by your own hand, extended that to let's also talk about Logan.
Yes, it was to watch Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Logan and talk about them. That was, whose challenge was this?
This was your challenge.
It can't be my challenge. It was your challenge.
No, I, well.
You keep heisting, you keep grabbing the challenge away from others.
Considering I, again, did not go see this movie for a second week in a row, pretty sure it's not my challenge.
Oh, you didn't even do it?
I didn't do it.
Oh,
I've been taking,
we got cocks cocked again.
I've been taking these fucking powders for 3 days. And
Alex!
I'm starting to grow testicles. I was not going to sit for 3 hours and pay $50.
I'm going to sit around and watch little tree puppet run around.
I love.
I got
the
a big
tree
heart.
Puppet.
It's full of blood.
I don't trust that raccoon. How do they get that thing to move around like that? That sorcerer.
That's one of these human animal
like,
chimeras
like, well, he's
they've
one
been
of those
making
little
with
goblins.
Robots. Mm. It turns the trees gay.
I loved the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. My daughter loved it. It was the original OG breath of fresh air. Marvel movie. It was delightful from beginning to end. The use of music, they really had me with this movie, taking these obscure characters, taking, you know, all the, so much of the bloat and seriousness out of the MCU stuff. Utterly delightful. I'm not certainly not the only person to have really enjoyed the first movie and really, really, really look forward to the second one. And I saw it.
I feel like this is the easiest Marvel movie to not fuck up a sequel with, and apparently that's what happened. So I'm just I'm kind of done with the Marvel universe stuff.
Oh yeah, they kind of weezered me a little bit. Where like I really have so much enjoyed a couple of their things, but now with more and more things out there, this is such a dick thing to say. I hate when people say things like this. But now, like, when I really sit down and think about, like, how, as I sit here today, how much I enjoyed that movie at the time, how much I think about it since for so many of those Marvel movies, and the Fox ones, and even a lot of the X-Men ones, and the Spider-Men, and all of those. Like, I sit here, I go, like, you know, some of them, I just was excited because I was going to this movie with my kid. And they weren't really that. There's a couple really good X-Men movies. Dares. I see that like an Iron Man tune. I actually really enjoyed Iron Man 2. I really like the first Thor movie. I really like the first Captain America movie. And I like some of the later ones too. I think Winter Soldier is a really interesting movie. But, you know, they got a lot of, and as I sat in the theater, I'm talking because you guys aren't. I hope you will. But as I sat in the theater, I enjoyed it because I was ready. I was like, and you know, your first viewing of a movie in the theater with your 9-year-old, in my case, of course, you're ready. You're so there. Like, please, I am an open vessel. Fill me with joy. I want to love every digital frame of this movie. I am so all in. This is the kind of movie you look forward to for 2 years, and I'm so ready to love it. I Phantom Menaced my way into this and was like, yeah, this is good, right? And then like kind of all throughout it, there were times where I was like, oh, that's the direction you're going with this, huh? The whole Yondu thing is the thing we're going to be sticking with. And why is the team not together? Is this your Empire Strikes Back? Like, what's happening here? And then, and by the time it was done, I was like, that was, you know, enjoyable. And now every time I try to, in prepping for this, everything I wrote down, everything that occurred to me that I have to say about this movie is negative.
Well,
and I feel terrible about it.
There's no question. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, worse than the original. I love the original. I have like very mixed feelings about the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general. I don't begrudge other people for liking it. Like, I think they're like, well, I think one of the things about the Marvel movies is every single one of them is like very well produced. Like, they have like good actors, good cast. They all look good. Like, they're all well done, like, superhero movies. I just think they're mostly pretty bad and samey. And I have a lot of sort of filmmaking complaints about them. So one of my main complaints about the Marvel movies is there's tons of fighting. There's constantly people punching each other, and the punches escalate in strength. And it's this guy has to fight that guy, and you find out who wins. And I understand this is sort of a trope of comic book stuff.
When you put it that way, sounds really boring.
Well, I understand it's sort of a trope of comic book stuff of like, oh, what if fucking Thor fought the Hulk or whatever? Who would win? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But it's like, it doesn't matter. It's like most of the time when you're watching these fight scenes, it's just sort of like usually at the climax of the third act, it just sort of crumbles because you know that the hero's not going to die or get hurt. You know that nothing is going to change. You know that the bad guy is going to lose. And you're just sort of like looking at your watch and like waiting for this thing to end. And like these movies sometimes have like I recently watched rewatched a Civil War, Captain America Civil War. And like, that's a long ass movie with a lot of fight scenes. Like that whole thing at the airport, it was like the most boring shit in the world. Like, who cares? The guy got big and small and they've shot them with the web. And it's like, you know, no one's going to die or get hurt.
You didn't enjoy it while it was happening? You didn't think it was fun while it was happening?
No, I was very bored by it. It didn't matter. There were no consequences for the characters. Action, in order for action to work, which I do like action in movies, but it has to have emotional consequences for the characters. And it's robbed of all emotional consequences for the characters in these Marvel movies where you know that really nothing is going to change and no one's going to
get hurt. You got to do a Die Hard. It's got to be something where there are huge stakes. It is stacked against you and you have some, in that case, he doesn't have shoes. But
yes.
He perseveres through all of that. But the stakes combined with, it isn't just immortals hitting each other.
Much like in Die Hard without the shoes, what's his name? John McClane without the shoes. The action also works best when it's like a little metaphor for what's happening with the character in his interior state. When the fight is cleverly done to tell you something about these people and what's at stake and who they are. Right. Okay, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I was very confused the whole time. I thought that it was sort of joyless, like it was sort of moving all these pieces on the board in a very mechanical way. I felt that it tried so hard to be like big and epic and to have these like big moments and these emotional moments, and it was communicating to you constantly the whole time, this is a big story, these are on a big planet, this is a big cave, there's big things happening, this is a big army. And I don't like being told that. Like, it's like, it feels like you got to really care about this, it's really bad what's happening. It's like, well, if it was really bad what was happening, I would figure that out myself from the context. So I feel like almost everything wrong with the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general, a very good example of what's happening with that in Guardians of the Galaxy. And just mashing all these characters together and putting them on the screen and watching them fight each other does not necessarily yield a good film. It can. I think Iron Man 1 is a good film. Mm-hmm. I think Guardians of the Galaxy 1 is a good film. I thought the first Avengers was a good film. But, you know, to some extent, those films are like fresh They're like new, so you get the novelty of learning about the characters in the world. They're funny. They're playing against type. They're subverting your expectations. Very hard, if not impossible, to do that in a sequel. Because in this movie, mm-hmm. in two, they felt it was necessary to reference every fucking bit and joke from the first movie. You name a popular moment in the first movie, and whatever you can think of, whatever is on your note card of a little inside joke that you liked from the first movie, they had to fucking bring it back for an encore in this movie.
Yeah, Howard the Duck. Yeah.
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 A lot of things have been written about how the first Avengers destroyed Joss Whedon's soul. And you can sort of tell in every Marvel
film
after that.
Why? Because that movie's good. Everyone likes that movie, right?
It is good. But you can just tell that it's like there were scenes. I mean, they brought him on because initially the writers just made this soulless thing. And there was punchy, punchy, punch. And I always think about his run on X-Men where there were the punchy punches, but
it was really about the characters and their lives and relationships.
Yeah, and even though like there was a silver guy and there were tight suits and I knew nothing about the backstory, it was still a really good, engaging book, and I loved it. And you can tell from like the Avengers that's the characters are there. But they wanted to put it in a cookie cutter template of a film. And I think that's why Jon Favreau left the Iron Man series, because I love Iron Man 1 and I love the original Avengers and Captain America 2.
First act of Iron Man 3 was really good, where he doesn't have the suit.
I mean, but that I feel like that's kind of Robert Downey
Jr. I didn't like anything about that movie hardly at all. But go listen to the director's commentary on the Avengers, and he just sounds like he's still just racked with anxiety. There's mm-hmm. the whole time, mostly all he's talking about is how he wishes we could have done this scene better. We did not have the time. We did not have the budget. The entire thing felt rushed. And like, you know, it's another one of those things. Like, it sucks to be successful, because then nobody ever has any sympathy for you ever again, because now you're just another rich guy. But in that guy's case, like, I think he does sweat his stuff, and he really does want it to be great, and he really wants to tell stories about people. And who wouldn't turn down the chance to direct a fucking Avengers movie? I mean, my God, if you can make it work, yeah, of course you're going to do it. But it just sounds like it was really like pulling teeth the entire time. And working for Marvel is hard. They are a hard company to work for.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a company. And it shows in their films, they have a company style. You got to do things the Marvel way. You can't take a surprising turn with a character. We'll get into this in the long, boring thing that I'm going to read this week. But there's a reason that their Marvel movies all feel self-similar, and they have like a company brand, and you kind of know what you're getting into when you see a Marvel movie. And everything is like a three-act, you know, hero's journey archetype stamped out of a fucking, you know, prefabricated template.
But can I just say, I just want to foreshadow one little bit before we move on, which is that, you know, if you think about all the ones that, think about all these movies that you loved. I mean, it could be a part two. It could be a sequel. I mean, it certainly has happened in the history of movies. Certainly Godfather is an example that comes to mind. But even with Marvel, even with the Warner movies, the Sony movies, all of those things, I have to always then think about Edgar Wright, who is my favorite director working right now. And the thing that all of these things have in common is, like, with Edgar Wright, when he makes a movie, it's not unusual for him to also, if not overturn, if not reinvent, at least overturn a genre. Like, all three Cornetto trilogy movies are basically like such a fresh look at a genre movie. And that's the thing, is that now we know that feeling of having walked out at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and said, I want to walk right back into that theater. I'll go there, man. Iron Man, the first Iron Man movie, is fantastic.
Great film.
You're mm-hmm. so excited by the end of that movie. But what do all these things have in common? It's a fresh take on something that you think you understand. People will not remember this today, but before the first Iron Man movie, the superhero genre was not a big thing. It was a silly thing. It was not something, there have been so many called, it was a genre that was primarily.
Wait a minute. Wasn't the Batman movies, wasn't that after Dark Knight?
Well,
around the same time, I think.
I mean, it was the thing is, though, like, the Dark Knight wasn't marketed as everybody in the world is going to see this. Like, they tried to do that with Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2, which I...
Same year.
I really like Spider-Man 2.
No, what I think was happening was in 2000, Dark Knight and Iron Man both came out in 2008. Isn't it crazy to think that the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe is
less
than 10 years old? It's
crazy. It's completely crazy. Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So I think that I agree with your overall analysis here that what makes these movies good is when they subvert your expectations and play against type and surprise you. I think that you were entering an era of the gritty reboot when everything was being this was the trend, which is still continuing, of like, if you were going to have a movie, it was going to be this like dark Zack Snyder shit, or the Dark Knight, where it was like very serious, like solemn, you know, somewhat pretentious or serious filmmaking of like, let's take the Batman and take him.
Let's say it in two letters. It's a very DC, like post Sin City kind of approach, right?
Yeah. Everything is all CGI'd to hell and very serious. And there's mud on everything. And Iron Man was so refreshing because it was funny. Robert Downey Jr. had fun. It was like, there's jokes in it. It surprised you. It was joyful. It was a joyful, fun ride.
All I wanted to say was that, like, the thing that I feel is in common with all of those things, that is a very obvious thing to say, but still very important, is we remember loving those movies. We remember loving the way that they look. You know what? I feel like that for me, though, as I look back over all of those, the thing that I really remember is how excited I was that this was not only better than what I expected, but it was so different from what I expected. That the approach they took with this was so bananas that I never could have guessed. And the other movie that we'll talk about this week, I think, is a bravura example of that, of like, holy shit, how did you actually go there with this movie? To where I think there's a chance that in the next 5 years, Logan may be the movie that we mention to talk about how you can completely, even at the end of a series, utterly change the direction that was taken with the series. If you get the right person with the right group on the right job with the right rating, you can go somewhere nobody expects. So what we miss with Guardians 2, we miss that sense of, holy shit, I didn't even think this would be possible. Because you're going into the theater praying that this will actually be twice as good as the first one. So like, you can't help but have high expectations feeling.
It's literally an impossible self-defeating thing, because how do you have a sort of playing against type parody, right, and then do a sequel to it?
Absolutely.
Like, it's an impossible, you know, you have to like subvert the subversion. You're putting a hat on a hat. There's a great tweet that one of our friends made. I wish I remembered who, but it was like around the time that the new Star Wars movie came out, and they said, you know, really, everybody thinks they want a new Star Wars movie, but they don't want that. What they want is a new thing that makes them feel the same way that Star Wars made them
feel.
That's
a great way to put it. That's exactly what I've been trying to say. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Logan. Quick note for listeners. If you have not seen Logan, I had the experience of going into this movie where I just went, like, Andrew and Tommy were working late in the office, and Andrew was like, hey, let's go see a movie. And we were like, what's playing? A new X-Men movie. All right, let's go see it. I haven't seen almost any of the X-Men movies. I don't know shit about Wolverine. I've never seen the Wolverine movies. I didn't know anything about this. I literally walked in blind thinking this was going to be an average, normal, generic superhero movie. I sat down and it fucking blew me out of my seat. It's like burned the eyebrows off my face. It was so good. So if you haven't seen Logan, if you don't know anything about it, stop what you're doing. I think it's on iTunes now. Just go watch it. Just turn the podcast off. Don't get spoiled.
It is not a kid's movie. Do not take a kid to this movie. It is a hard R movie.
We have different opinions about that. Right now that I have not also haven't seen Logan.
Oh my God, Alex!
We got cucked again.
Jesus.
There are a lot of good books that have been coming out.
What are your favorite books? What are your favorite books?
Let's talk about books.
Yeah, what are some of your favorites that you've read?
Let's talk about books now. It's about books.
I reread Elon Musk's biography.
This is over. All right,
you're done.
Conversation over.
7 years dungeon, no trials.